Hello and welcome to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching. I'm Rachel Sullivan.
And I'm John Tattersall.
Hi there and welcome to episode 9 of the Building Better Leaders podcast. Given this podcast is about building better leaders, we were thinking, weren't we, John, that we'd probably best do a podcast on the subject of leadership and leadership theory itself, at least in the first 10 episodes. So here you go. And we're also very excited about today's podcast because it's our first request. Last week, we had a request from somebody new to a people management role asking us to explain the difference between leadership and management in the organisational context. So here you have it, our first request podcast. The terms leadership and management and leaders and managers are often interplayed in the work setting when they actually mean quite different things. And this is more common when there are many, many layers in the organisational hierarchy. And its distinction is not always made clear to those new to people management and indeed to leadership. It tends to be something that's learned through lots of experience rather than been taught or talked about explicitly in the work setting. The result can often be quite confusing, especially for those starting to climb the corporate career ladder. So today we thought we'd cover this topic of leadership to hopefully provide a bit more clarity to you and to get you thinking about leadership and your leadership or management style in new ways. So in today's conversation, we will cover what leadership is and what it isn't. And in doing so, we'll also draw some comparisons between leadership and management.
So as usual, today's format will run in two parts. First, we're going to take up just 10 minutes to discuss three leadership essentials that you can reflect on. Again, if this subject is something that really resonates with you, please stay with us for the coaching approach, where we explore the concept of leadership and making the transition to leader from management, where we successfully become leaders that we want to be. We'll look at our fictional character, Janet, and her inner struggles on her journey as part of the coaching approach. But first of all, in Leadership Essentials, Leadership Essential number 1. Leadership is the ability to inspire a team of people to achieve a common goal. Now, there are lots of definitions around leadership, but essentially this is the one that really stands out for us. It's about bringing your team with you. So if we break this definition down, what is leadership? Leadership stems from social influence, not an authority or power. It needs others, but doesn't mean you have to have direct reports. So the sort of things that spring to mind might be somebody who breaks the rules a little bit, somebody who shapes the culture, a leader that innovates, often asks the question why, can take risks, inspires, disrupts, challenges. Now, Tony Robbins says everyone can become a leader, and I really do love this. Leadership is not a skill or preference you are born with. It's something that can be built and learned over time. And I think, you know, leaders do pay attention to the environment that they find themselves in, or one that they actually even create. And, you know, they set the tone, they think about how we learn most. So following on from what Tony Robbins is advocating, it's about setting direction. It requires a vision or a goal. It's about setting the direction of the company and its people. And they influence, inspire and help others. Leaders focus on inputs and not outputs. Leaders lead people. So we believe that leaders pay attention to the environment that they collectively create. And they set the tone. They think about how we learn, most of us. We just generally learn socially. We copy from others what we've seen. And I think this is often where we run into difficulty. You could have been working for somebody whose outputs were really, really good. And you decide to mimic that leadership kind of style. But that might not actually work for you. So I think in doing so, leaders, their role is to make people feel safe by providing some certainty around their futures. when we feel safe, I think that, I mean, humans can do amazing things when we feel safe. You know, lots of stuff can happen. We've got innovation, cooperation, problem solving, decision making, creativity. We thrive in these kind of environments and people work better together. And if you've ever watched any of Simon Sinek's TED Talks on how great leaders inspire action, if you haven't watched them, I really would urge you to do so. And we'll put a link in on the show notes for this. So that's leadership essential number one. It's around inspiring a team of people to achieve a common goal.
So leadership essential number two is leadership isn't management. So it isn't a senior role or a position of authority or hierarchy in an organisation. Unfortunately, leadership isn't something that automatically happens at a certain pay grade. I wish it did, but then we wouldn't have jobs, would we, John?
We wouldn't.
And it is nothing to do with a position or a job role. Leadership can emerge at any level of the organisation. In short, leadership isn't management. This is a distinction I'd really like you to remember. Good managers are not always good leaders. Stephen Covey talks around leadership is about direction. And really, if you think about it around, if the leader creates the direction, he makes and draws the comparison that management is then around setting the pace and the process. So otherwise it's around, you know, what's leaders set the vision, the managers focus on timing, resources, they manage the inputs around that process. Another thing that Covey makes and points out is that while a leader needs to be visible, it doesn't always mean that they need to be super available. And you may be kind of listening to this with slight confusion, thinking, well, in your earlier podcasts, particularly around managing change, you've talked around the leader needs to be super visible. And yes, the leader does need to be visible. But what we're saying is managers are far more available, and visibility and availability are not always the same thing. The role of the manager is to be available, to almost be in there. And this is the thing where most leaders fall down in leadership, is that leadership takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to really focus on a vision and a plan. It takes time to make the difficult decisions required to set the direction and to bring and inspire people together and work out what works best for the majority rather than the few. And that means not being as available when you are doing that. It's around stepping away from the day-to-day doing and almost the addictive kind of feelings of being needed and firefighting and getting shit done, really, John, isn't it? That managers really love. And I think a lot of people that make that transition from management to senior leadership really struggle with is, how do you let go of the day-to-day and that day-to-day feedback? It's like the adrenaline buzz and the hit that you're getting, that you're like, bosh, I've done that. So that's one of the big things to make a distinction on. And while we're on the subject of management, it's also probably worth spending a few minutes on making a clearer distinction between leadership and management, which is something that many organisations do not do well. So for our podcast request, this one is for you. So if we think about it in terms of making clear distinctions, if you think about it, managers plan, they measure, they monitor, they coordinate, problem solve, hire, they fire. They focus on managing P&Ls, client relationships, customer satisfaction. Back to John's earlier distinction, they manage the outputs. They focus on outputs like the above, rather than how their people get the work done, improving processes, removing blockages. They're often unaware of the environment that their actions create. Now, this is a distinction. It's not to say that some managers don't also lead. So you might be listening to this and thinking, but I do a bit of both. Brilliant. But what we're talking about is the distinction between the role of a manager and a leader. And the primary distinction is managers manage things, leaders lead people. Poor managers often treat their people as such. They treat them as things to be managed, pushing them, expecting them to work how they work themselves or how they themselves like to work. And this is often portrayed in the form of command and control, do it instruction. If you've ever been on the receiving end of that from somebody who's got a very different style to you, this will be ticking a lot of boxes for you now, and be like, that made me feel extremely uncomfortable. And often that that manager doesn't get the best out of you. So when we're talking about the distinction between leadership and management, managers and leaders, the natural progression within an organisational hierarchy, you know, not all, but some, is to usually become a manager first and then progress to being a leader. But many make the jump into leadership with the mindset of a manager. Isn't that right, John? You know, and this is often where we get people coming to us for coaching. I would probably say this is the most common stage that I coach in. When somebody's been a manager, a very successful manager for a number of years, and they've been promoted into a more senior role, and then it's not working for them.
Yeah, and I think they wonder then why they're not really considered that inspirational, or why it doesn't seem to be working all of a sudden.
This is usually when we get people that are overwhelmed because they're managing people as they are things.
Yeah, we'll look at that a little bit later in the coaching approach when we consider Janet's journey. But it is interesting, I think, when you work in an organisation and you're promoted within that organisation, you then often become the leader of people that you were managing before.
Yeah.
And you continue to manage them, but think that you're leading them.
Yes.
And it's difficult for them to relate to you in that respect. And it goes back to that first point that we were making earlier on about you mimic other people's approach to leadership because that's what you've seen and that's how you've learnt it. And I think now organisations are getting much better at coaching people in leadership positions, and certainly when they're making that move within a team to become that leader.
So the purpose of explaining leadership essential number two is hopefully to give you a bit more clarity around the distinction between what a leader is and what a manager is. And most importantly, I want you to be really thinking about your current role and what is it you are doing. Are you leading or are you managing? And in the purest sense of the word, you know, you can be employed as a people manager and that's absolutely fine. But in that role, what are you managing? And you will always have to lead them somewhere, even if you are a people manager, but making the distinction around where it needs to be. And if you are more senior, are you doing more of the managing or are you doing more of the leading? And just really reflect on that. Both are important, but it's important to understand the distinctions.
So finally, leadership essential number three. Think about the different kind of leadership styles. Is it directive or is it non-directive? So the simplest introduction to leadership theory and one of the best ways to make the distinction between leadership and management today is the theory of directive versus non-directive leadership styles. So what is leadership when it's directive? Well, it became very popular back in the Industrial Revolution, and that's really where it stemmed from. So where people were working in factories, where labour was seen as something to be managed around a set of tasks with a set of firm rules for behaviour and operation, and really for output. So it is really in essence a command and control approach. So despite how much of the world of work has changed in the last 200 years, directive leadership is still one of the most common styles of leadership used today. Now, management tends to be directive. Leadership tends to be non-directive, but there are some exceptions. A directive leadership style is pretty simplistic, so you can take the approach of telling someone to do something or expect a consequence to happen. But leaders don't need to be trained in a specific way to use this leadership style. And there are advantages to directive leadership, and it can work well, but it's important to understand when and under which circumstances it works best. I think if you have a team that's got like little experience or a largely unskilled team, this approach is often used for managing in low-skilled, low-paid employees.
Yeah, as it's placed today, and that's often where you see it.
Yeah, and you know, those the rules and the regulations are really a sort of a primary emphasis for directive leadership style, often used to emphasise safety, quality. So if you think about working in the military, law enforcement, construction, where there's no real room for error, you know.
Or where the cost of not doing so is human life. Yeah, it's really, really important that directive leadership and that command and control is followed.
Yeah, there have to be certain rules. If you think about health and safety on a building site, then they're there for an obvious reason. It's really often required in a crisis or urgent situations when a solution is needed right now. An urgent action is of a real paramount importance. And most employees usually understand this and they adhere to those situations when the communication is clear. And it is also useful when employees are in a personal crisis, I think, feeling anxious or have high levels of stress because of a personal issue.
And I think that's where we've seen directive leadership take its place in the last 4 to 6 months, really, with the coronavirus and COVID-19.
Yeah.
A lot of organisations and leadership was probably more on the non-directive end of the scale, moved to be very directive for that period where lockdown was enforced. And even though working from home in itself lends itself to non-directive, a lot of leadership very early on in the COVID-19 crisis was directive. And particularly from our governments, we saw a very directive skew towards leadership. Our movements were restricted massively. There were consequences if we didn't follow them, and that was is the right thing to do when people's anxiety is high and the stress is high. It would actually make things worse if people were asked to bear the pressure themselves of making decisions for themselves.
For sure, for sure.
Mm. So I think the lesson here is directive leadership, although for many it's an outdated concept of leadership, but most people default to it because it's easy to teach and people feel secure in it and they've learned from past leaders. And it's the one that people we've copied even from our parents, from our ancestors, from years and years and years ago. So that's directive leadership. Non-directive leadership, on the other hand, is more associated with leadership as you and I would see it, John, in the newer sense of the world, where people they focus on inputs, not outputs, where they assume that their staff know how and that if they provide them with the best environment, they will be able to do how, where they don't focus on having all the answers. So in directive leadership and management, you need to know how to do everything because you need to know how to do everything to be able to judge whether everybody's doing it better than you could do it or as good as you could do it. In non-directive leadership, you don't need to profess to have all the answers. You need to be asking better questions. You need to be testing assumptions. You need to be inviting people to have a say. You need to be seeking feedback on the process, continually improving, safe to fail experiments, being open to what emerges in the system, empowering others to do things better than you could yourself, being very, very proactive and being really passionate. And really non-directive leadership comes from having a really clear idea around what your vision is, but being very open to what the process and the how and the what might emerge to make that happen.
Yeah, and I think just to recap then, leadership, essential number one, looked at the ability as a leader to inspire a team of people.
Yeah.
Looking to achieve a common goal. It's about providing direction and creating the right environment for people to work in. And management is about pace and process, and managers manage things. Directive leadership, that tends to be more management focused and assumes people need do-it instruction to get the job done most efficiently. Non-directive management is more focused on leadership and requires people to work together cooperatively to get the best results.
So hopefully that's helped in terms of making those distinctions. One thing to take away from this is, although your job title might say manager or leader at the end of it, or director or CEO or something like that, there will be aspects of your job that require both. It's about really thinking about what is the essence of your job? Is it to manage or is it to lead? And wherein are those blurred lines where you can employ a little bit more of directive leadership style when it's required? When can you be more non-directive when it suits the circumstances and outputs and inputs required better? And it's about finding a balance of that works for the role that you're at, for the team around you, and for the vision and the organisational context that you're in.
If you're keen to learn more about this subject, stay with us for the Scaffold Coaching Approach.
In today's coaching approach, we delve a little deeper into the subject of what is leadership and what it isn't, and start thinking about some of the more specific coaching questions that we could help with the person who's going through this inner journey. For many, the transition from management to leadership is hard. It's not something that feels natural. It can feel uncomfortable and at times bloody difficult. It's why there are so many leaders who still manage and that they need to feel involved in the detail. But we need to ask, what is the impact and effect on the team and indeed the whole organisations when leaders are more focused on management rather than leadership? To help us better understand this subject, let's have a look at our fictional character, Janet, and see what she's been up to. Janet has recently been promoted from a mid-level manager role to a leadership role. Her direct reports have increased from 4 to 10, looking after a wider team of nearly 75. And she's usually super motivated and is always the first to put her hand up to volunteer to take on new projects. The CEO loves her because she's always willing to toe the company line. But recently, since this big promotion to the leadership team, Janet started to look and feel frazzled. And she's arrived at her latest coaching session feeling and looking very overwhelmed. She has got a physical sense of exhaustion around her. And when she starts to talk about her issue, she said that she's got this sense of that she's firefighting and she's got a never-ending stream of emails that she simply cannot keep on top of. And she took a much-needed holiday 2 weeks ago, but since coming back, there's a whole new list of demands from her boss, a massive client problem that's, in her words, gone tits up. And so she ended up working 80 hours last week just to catch up, but now feels on the verge of a meltdown and in desperate need of another break again. So what could be going on here, John?
So to take a little bit of a step back, let's think about Janet as in her management role. She was a really, really diligent manager.
Mm.
And let's face it, that's what got her noticed and hired in the first place. She likes putting herself under pressure and she likes to be on top of everything. And that is about her wanting things to be done in a certain way. And she wants to be across everything. She wants to see everything that goes out from a wider company perspective, and in particular from her team.
And when we probe her on this, this is what she associates her sense of trust with and feeling competent. To her, when we probe her, feeling competent goes with being across things.
Yeah.
And that's the distinction she's made.
And it's about getting things done. So that's fine when you've got four
brilliant
direct reports.
Mm.
But when you've got 10 people who have got a team underneath them that's like 75, you know, once you've got those 10 people emailing you in and wanting to speak to you daily, Janet's now feeling like her role's become firefighting. She's not getting things done. She's just basically handing stuff off. She's become very reactive. And she's struggling with the whole enormity of that. You know, she likes to have a say on everything, and it means that the team start to rely on her more and more. They want her opinion. They've stopped thinking about offering new suggestions because whenever they have, they've been dismissed fairly quickly by Janet because they're not how she would have done it. And so we're back to this management style, but it's in the guise of a leader.
Mm. And the CEO is quite on it, but as usually happens in these situations, the lag is quite long. So it's been 4 or 5 months since Janet's promotion, but this lag of feedback that a team have stopped coming to her with solutions has taken a while for her CEO to realise. So when we're in the coaching session and this is presented to Janet as feedback that her team feel undermined and that their opinion doesn't matter, she's genuinely mortified. Mm. She doesn't think that this is how she comes across. And yet, as we're starting to present this feedback, the penny's starting to drop and she's starting to realise very slowly that it might not be that much fun or that empowering to work for Janet.
Yeah, and to think about how this directive leadership style that she has been used to using could be linked to some of the issues in a team and definitely linked to her stress levels.
Definitely.
So, what is the learning for Janet?
Well, most of us learn through directive parent-to-child role modelling in life and in work. And as such, most of us first learn how to lead in this way. So Janet's probably learnt this style from somebody that managed her, and she's made these associations around being across things as being in control and about being competent. But what she now needs to recognise is that the type of work that needs to be done and that is required from her has changed, and it's constantly changing, and as such our leadership approaches need to change, and even the way our employees learn needs to change. Leaders must learn to adopt a non-directive approach to be inspirational and effective in today's world, whilst also being cognizant of the benefits of directive style in certain situations for short periods of time. The learning for Janet here, and where the penny is starting to drop and the learning starting to appear for her, is that something that feels good in short bursts is becoming her go-to style because it feels good for her. And what she's not understanding is what that's doing to her reputation and how that actually creates an environment for others where they feel they have no autonomy, no say. And actually, as is the feedback, 2 out of her 10 direct reports have already handed their notice in and actually don't want to work for her. Which is totally at odds with her need to feel like she's on top of everything, because she actually can't control even whether they stay or go.
Mm. And I think what's also interesting here is the role of the CEO. Mm. The CEO did like her when she was a manager because she towed the company line. She got a lot of things done. Yet there's some sort of the missed the point, really, in not allowing Janet to develop a leadership style before she started this role. And so she's happening so many times.
She's now thinking, are they thinking I've been promoted too soon? When really, there's an emphasis here on the CEO, and he's probably thinking she's not ready for this. Well, actually, you promoted her for the behaviours and you praised the behaviours where she was managing well. You weren't praising and rewarding her behaviours where she was leading. Mm. And has she been shown how to lead?
Yeah.
Now, luckily, she's in a coaching environment, so it's something to be worked on. But make no mistake, as Janet goes on this journey, it's going to be bloody uncomfortable for her team, even as she starts to transition out of managing and into leading. Because even though half of her team really, really don't like it, the other half... well, at least she's predictable when she's directive. So we're going to start to see the wings and wanes of when you start to change as a manager or a leader, and how your people sometimes don't even like it when you change, even if it's for their good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So what can you learn from Janet's situation? It may be that what's happening to Janet and the story that we've just told is something that resonates to you personally on your old journey, or something that you can reflect on in your own journey a time gone by. It might be that what we're talking about with Janet's story is something that you're on the receiving end of and that you can see in your own leaders. Either way, I think the takeaway on this is really around leadership development at its core is primarily around increasing your awareness. So the first thing to look at is awareness of yourself. Are you a manager or a leader? Answer that question and reflect on it quickly in your head now. Now, the reality is you're probably a bit of both, but what is it your job to manage and what is it your job to lead? And kind of make a distinction between those two. Then the second level of awareness is thinking about how others see you. And this is something Janet hadn't done. She hadn't thought about how her team see her and how that was different when she was a mid-level manager and now she's a senior leader. And this is because in leadership, your reputation is your leadership style and your reputation is what others subconsciously expect from you before you walk into the room, before they interact with you on an email, before they interact with you in a conversation. And it's really powerful stuff in leadership because leaders have control over aspects of other people's lives. How do others see you? Are you too directive or are you not directive enough in critical times? And I think the really important thing around directive versus non-directive management is it's not a one-size-fits-all at all different times. You know, you might have people in your team that need non-directive leadership. You might have people in your team that need directive leadership. The difference between leadership and management is it shouldn't be this. Leadership shouldn't be the same for everyone. You know, you can manage things fairly, like manage processes fairly, but you need to lead people in the way that best suits them and where they're at. And for some, that will be more directive. For some, that will be more non-directive. And then the third thing to be aware of and increasing your awareness of is the impact you have on others. And this is notably about the working environment you create. And this is about leadership. And this feelings of trust and cooperation are results of the environment that you create. You cannot, as Simon Sinek says, dictate that somebody trusts you. In fact, if you say, trust me, the alarm bells are usually going for me as soon as somebody says that word. I'm like, I'm about to get screwed here. And therefore, you know, how much your people collaborate and how productive they are is directly correlated to the environment that you create as a leader. And we often think that if there's an issue with our team when things are not going to plan, it's probably a good idea to also start thinking about how you are contributing to this issue consciously and also subconsciously, like Janet. And where we saw with Janet, there was a downturn in productivity in her team. Now, her natural reaction wasn't to think about how I'm contributing to this. Her natural reaction to this was to think about my team aren't pulling the weight and I'm overwhelmed and I have to do it myself. She wasn't looking at the role she was proactively playing in this, albeit that it had taken 5 months for this behaviour to seep in and embed itself.
So for Janet, in order to increase her awareness then, as Rachel said earlier on, bloody hard. This is very difficult to move from being a manager to being a leader. But some of the things that she needs to improve her awareness around might be something like, how does she treat conflict? She's used to avoiding it, really.
Yeah, we talked about that on an earlier podcast, didn't we?
And she needs to now start using it.
Is yes, I'm right on top of that. Yes, I'm right on top of that.
Yeah.
She needs to start engaging in conflict and using conflict for problem solving.
So, because managers will generally try and avoid it, a leader will use it. So you have to think about how you can use it. And going back to your point earlier on, Rachel, about some people need directive, some people need non-directive, you have to use that in the way that works best for those individuals.
Totally.
And that's a really strong leadership trait. When she's asking questions as well of a team, she's normally wanting to get things done. She's got deadlines to meet. So the question she normally asks is, when? When will this be done? When will I have the results? When will that have actually gone out to the client? She needs to change the nuance of that and ask the question around, why? Why are we doing it in this way? What is the process? Is that the most efficient way for you to be working when she's talking to one of her 10 people in a leadership team? So what other things might she want to consider? There are rules, of course, within the organisation, and she's being used to making them a lot of the time because that creates the process which goes back to delivering the unit on time. she needs to probably start thinking about, can she break some of those rules because it's not working for everybody in the team? And so that needs to make her a little bit more consultative, I think.
Mm.
A lot of her role now is, when she thinks about breaking the rules, means that she might have to make some changes. So instead of maintaining the status quo and everything being all tickety-boo and all the boxes ticked, she might have to start actually thinking about making some changes.
Mm. And I think one of the hardest things for somebody like Janet, who is very conscientious in terms of a personality style and a massive planner, massively over-indexes in the J score on the Myers-Briggs, for those that you're familiar with, is that in management you can have that sense of things are done and that tick. And in leadership, some of these things are never going to be finished. They're ongoing, they're evolving, they're constantly changing, and that is okay. And that's a big transition to get your head around.
Yeah. So what other things might Janet want to be a little bit more sort of cognizant of around her own awareness? So she's having to change, she's having to break some of the rules, she's having to ask why. All those things are pointing to somebody being very proactive. Whereas in a management role before, she's been quite reactive. The CEO says he wants this doing, and she reacts and she does it, and that's why she's ended up getting promoted. It almost seemed backwards, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, she often accepts a lot of the rules. If the CEO says that this is what he needs to do, what he wants to see, then she accepts that. She's going to have to start challenging some of those beliefs now, because she's going to have to work with her team in working better with them, and that might need her to sort of kick back a little bit. So all these things are connected.
And the irony with her CEO is he's promoted her because she was very good at doing what he asked. But now he's pissed off that she's avoiding conflict in her team, and she's not realised that she's not doing what he needs.
Yeah. Everything's backwards.
Everything's backward. And now he's annoyed that he's having to tell her what to do, when actually she's made her career and been promoted and rewarded on doing what he's told her. And now he wants her to think for himself, and he's annoyed that she's not thinking for herself.
Yeah.
And this is why she's at coaching.
He loved it, because she was quite instructional with her team, and she got things done. Now she's finding that that's not working. She now needs to motivate her team. And that's something that she's never really needed to do before.
She's relied on command and control and punishment.
Absolutely. So she needs to start creating a vision, and she needs to do that with her team, rather than this is how I want it to be. She needs to be quite consultative and bring them in. She needs to take a few risks, I think. She's, you know, avoiding conflict, avoiding risks. It's all an avoidance strategy because I'm not confident with it.
Yeah. So in the coaching conversation, we would really be asking Janet a lot of questions around that. It would take a long time to get to this stage. And it would be really focusing on awareness around the job to be done. And this will feel like a momentous task to her and very heavy. So initially, all we would focus on awareness, awareness, awareness. So when you focus on awareness, eventually it will form habits of mind, and these things will gradually start to become newer, more ingrained habits for her. But this is a very, very common journey that when people get promoted and they go up very quickly because of they're very good at doing what they're told. But then when they get promoted to a place where they are leading others, their performance usually dips quite significantly. And this is why our organisation is called Scaffold, because when your performance falls at a level like this, you usually need a scaffold around you in the form of somebody who can support your learning to help you see what's going on for you, and more importantly, the impact you have in others and your leadership reputation in new ways. The quicker we can do that, the quicker we can scaffold her up and bring her into being an inspirational leader that she is more than capable of being or becoming.
So there you are. Thank you for listening. Once again, if you have any questions, please do email us. Please direct message us. You can follow us on Twitter at Scaffold Coach. And please do, if you have any requests for future podcasts, really like to thank the individual who wanted us to distinguish between managing and leading. So if you have similar sort of requests, please do give us a shout.
Thanks a lot. Catch you next week.
See you again.
You've been listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast, brought to you by Scaffold Coaching.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, Google Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcast from, and give us a rating so other people can find this content. You can also find us on Twitter or Instagram at Scaffold Coach.